Well, the wind is howling. The temperatures are well below freezing in many parts of Wisconsin. You may be curled up on the sofa with a pet, a good book, and a crackling fire. How could you possibly feel lousy? And some people do. Maybe it's the indoor air that can be chock full of allergens or irritants. And according to our guest, depending on what you are allergic or sensitive to, winter can be a really awful time of the year. Our guest, Dr. Robert Bush, allergy and asthma researcher and professor emeritus at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, our guest today as we talk allergens and irritants, indoor irritants with him. Certainly, if you'd like to join in with questions or comments, I hope you will. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Robert Bush, welcome.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us today. Let's talk, you know, allergens, irritants. What are allergens? How do they differ from irritants?
Well, an allergy is actually an immune response to an environmental agent. Now, by that, we mean you have an immune defense system to fight infections. Our allergies are turned against things that are harmless, but it's only a small percentage of people that truly have allergy, but it's a growing percentage. Roughly 20% or so of the U.S. population have an allergy.
Oh, and then from an irritant is?
It's usually a sensitivity to something that would bother everyone. It doesn't usually involve the immune system. And examples of that would be cigarette smoke, dust particles, things that irritate your respiratory system but do not cause an allergy per se.
I tell you, I was going to ask you a question about dust mites, but Mary in Madison is on board with a question about dust mites. So let's go to Mary. Mary, hello.
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 Yes, I wonder if wool, I think I read somewhere that wool dust mites don't like wool.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. Dust mites like to attach themselves to fabrics like carpeting, clothing, so on and so forth. So I don't know that there's any evidence that I'm aware of that says they don't like wool. Okay. I think you can find them in wool clothing and so forth.
Are they more of a problem in winter than other seasons?
Well, it's actually the opposite, because during the winter months, the air indoors, particularly in our homes, is quite dry. And dust mites thrive in humid environments, so it's probably less of a problem, actually, in the winter.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Barry, for calling. Appreciate it. Diane in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm wondering if the doctor has any suggestions about a non-allergenic dog. I've been following the Obamas, looking for a puppy that their daughter won't be allergic to, and I'm just wondering if any breed like that exists.
Well, I don't know that we have as much information about dogs, but there may be some dogs that are slightly less likely to produce the allergen material than others, but by and large, if you look at pets, they all produce allergens, be it cats or dogs. Breeds may make a slight difference, but I'm not sure there's an absolutely allergen-free pet out there yet, although there is a genetic experiment going on, and you can purchase an allergen-free cat for like $6,000 if you're so inclined.
I wonder about, just along those lines, would a dog that doesn't shed, would shedding have anything to do with allergies?
Well, typically the source of the allergen material is not the fur or hair per se, but comes from the skin and saliva. Those are the major sources.
Ah, okay.
They lick their fur and they get it on the fur then.
I got it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Diane. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org as we talk with Dr. Bob Bush, allergy and asthma researcher at the UW. And Rudy in Oshkosh, you are up now. Hi, Rudy.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question I've never heard addressed. I wonder if, when a home is closed up in the winter, if there's a buildup of carbon dioxide from exhaling, that could be harmful to health.
Well, one of the measures of indoor air quality is to look at the carbon dioxide level and humidity. And if you have a very enclosed space and poor circulation, yes, people breathe the air in and expel the carbon dioxide. So obviously, if the house is very tight and not ventilated properly, there could be a buildup of carbon dioxide.
So there actually could be. And that's why I think with the new – one of the reasons with the newer homes, and I'm trying to remember the proper term now, air-to-air heat exchanger was the old term for it in a home. There's another term for it now, but it essentially recirculates the air, brings in inside outside air from the inside but warms it before it comes into the house.
Yes, it's important to have several factors to help indoor air quality. Ventilation is a good idea, so making sure your heating and air conditioning system is working up to par and that there is some fresh air circulating within the building.
Let's talk about, let's just take the, I don't know if there is such a thing as the average home, but let's try and come up with an average home here. What, does the average home have several potential allergy sources?
Well, there's probably not a home that doesn't have some dust mites. That's just part of our ecology in any human habitation. These little microscopic members of the arachnid family, like spiders, you can't see them. They're so small, you need a microscope. They feed on human skin scales. And if we didn't have them, we'd probably be up to our knees in human skin scales. So we have those in our environment. If you have a pet, obviously that's a source of potential allergy. And if you have water intrusion, especially we're talking in the winter months, mold growth can be an issue even in the winter because of condensation on windows and a water source. And that's really all a mold needs to grow is something to feed on, like carbon, and a water source. So those are some indoor allergen issues that could be occurring in the winter months.
Well, we'll take some more calls. Stacia and Augusta, I think your turn now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question for your guest about the possibility of a fungal lung infection that's becoming more prevalent. My mother down in Milwaukee and my neighbor up here in Augusta are both on TB medications for difficulties breathing. And my husband mentioned something about hunters being warned about picking up a fungal lung infection when they go out in the spring turkey hunting. And I've never heard anything about this, and the coincidence just seems very odd. And I'm wondering if your guest can shed any light on current research about this.
Sure. Well, possibly, although I can't speak specifically for these cases because I'm not familiar, but blastomycosis is a fungus that is in the outdoor environment, can be inhaled and cause serious lung infection that mimics tuberculosis and is often hard to diagnose. And I recall having seen some patients with that condition, and my colleagues in pulmonary medicine are much more versed in that than I am.
But I've had it, and
yes.
I can tell you right now, it is not any fun at all.
It is not a fun disease.
Not a fun disease at all. Thank you, Stacy. Appreciate it. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Joe emailed us wondering how much of a difference is there between the old fashioned thin furnace filter that is replaced monthly and the thick ribbed filter with more surface that is replaced once a year.
Well, those can filters are an important part of your ventilation system, too, to remove particulate matter, which can be irritating to people. And the filters that you're speaking about, they have a couple of advantages. The more expensive filters that were mentioned that have a larger surface area have electrostatic charge on them to take out particles from the air and are much more efficient than the old 10-cent or a dollar, I should say, filters we throw away every month. They're just much more efficient in removing those kinds of things from the air.
So the fact that I had that done to my furnace is probably a good thing.
Well, in general, it is. Particulates can cause respiratory irritation issues and just the overall cleanliness of the environment. So, again, it's probably wise to think about that as a possible way.
Margie in Franklin, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I'm really glad to talk to your program. I just have this last little thing you were talking about, the fungal lung infections. I have a very good friend in Arizona that was diagnosed 2 years ago after she moved there from Chicago.
Oh, you know what? We're having so much trouble reaching. I'm sorry we can't. Margie,
can you hear me?
Yeah. Now let's try it again. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a friend in Arizona that was diagnosed 2 years ago with a toxic fungal infection, COCCI.
Oh, I believe you're talking about coccidiomycosis again.
That's
it. A fungus that is prevalent in the Southwest and is probably similar to the blastomycosis that we experience up here in causing these kinds of conditions. It's very common out West.
Is there anything that can be done about it?
Usually, it can be treated with the appropriate antifungal medication, just as blastomycosis can be as well.
Yeah. Takes a little while to get over the blasto, I assume it's, and there are medications. There are medications for it.
They told her that she's never going to be able to be rid of it.
Well, I'm not an expert in this area. This is an area for infectious disease and pulmonologists that deal with this to probably best advise you.
Mm-hmm. So I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call and invite you to join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Give us a call as we talked with Dr. Robert Bush, allergy and asthma researcher, discussing allergens and irritant that we can run into indoors. If you're having allergy symptoms, sometimes I think it's tough to pinpoint the source. How do you do that?
I think as a physician, we generally get the history from the patient to find out exactly how they're being affected, and I think that's critical. With allergy, sneezing is an important clue, and itching. Those are generally hallmarks of allergy. You can have a stuffy nose, you can have runny nose, sneezing, usually clear runny nose rather than colored.
Mm-hmm.
If it's discolored or yellow, that speaks more of an infection. And if you have just congestion and a lot of postnasal drip and not much sneezing or itching, I would say it's probably less likely to be allergy and more likely to be due to an irritation. And as far as identifying what a person is allergic to, that requires testing, either by a skin test or a blood test to determine the exact allergy that's causing the problem.
And we'll take some more questions, but I'm wondering, we mentioned humidity levels earlier. You mentioned them in relation to winter. What is the ideal home humidity level for?
Well, particularly in this part of this time of year, I should say, we get very low humidity levels in our homes with our heating systems, and that can also dry your respiratory system and make you feel uncomfortable with congestion and irritation. So it's probably best around 30% to 40%, not above 50, because then you have dust mites, mold issues going on if you get too high humidity.
So 30% to 40%.
Probably in that range.
Dr. Robert Bush, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Allergies and indoor irritants now with Dr. Robert Bush, allergy and asthma researcher, professor emeritus at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Happy to have him along. Larry Mueller here. If you have a question, give us a jingle at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Bush, we had Jill from La Crosse send us an email. She moved into a new house about a year ago, and although we had the entire house cleaned, including carpets and ductwork, my allergies and asthma worsened significantly. My allergist said I could be allergic to Asian lady beetles that are very common since we live very close to the river. Any research done regarding this, lady beetles?
Well, actually, this is a very interesting thing. Here in the Midwest, we do have lots of Asian lady beetles, and there are reports of allergies in many parts of the U.S. And so if these insects infest a home or a building, Certainly, people can become allergic to them. The only way we know how to deal with it currently is to try to eliminate them, clean up the debris. There's a lot of research trying to identify what is causing the actual allergy, but so far, that's about the extent of our research on this, okay. But it does happen.
Nothing conclusive yet. Yep. Mary and McFarland, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I have a question about sort of overcoming animal allergies. I was allergic to cats my whole life and was at a point where if I stayed at anyone's house, I had to take antihistamines all the time. And then I moved into an old farmhouse, and we had a very bad mouse population, so we got ourselves two mousers. And there was a couple of points where I felt like I almost had an asthma attack, a very constricting throat, and basically kind of talked myself out of it and said, you're going to have to live with these cats. They're a part of our life here. Get over it. And now the cats actually sleep on my bed. And is there a way to tell the Obama kids something like, hey, you know, get a dog that sheds and eventually your daughter will outgrow it or they will get over it. So anyway, well, that's my question, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Well, thanks, Mary.
Your question is a very interesting one. There is such a thing that's called high dose tolerance. So initially, you develop an allergy. If you're exposed to a high level of the cat allergen, then over time you become tolerant to it. Now, if those cats that you have disappear, you're going to go back to square one at some point with the allergy just like you had before. So it's a temporary fix. And you see this in children whose families have pets. They go off to college and then they come home for Thanksgiving or Christmas and they're miserable. They're fine when they're around the cats over a long period of time.
John in Germantown, on to you now. Hi, John.
Larry, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I have a question. I might have asked this before. I can't recall. I have drainage just on one side of my sinuses, and I went and saw an ENT at my doctor's request, and he obviously did a ENT CT and said, well, he said, yeah, you do have that, and it's an allergy-related issue. And it just kind of befuddles me. Is it possible to only have allergies on one side of your sinuses? I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
That's a pretty unusual situation, not knowing the actual results of a CT scan. But one of the things that is always important if you have one-sided issues like you do, to look at the anatomy by a CT scan. And if there's a blockage on that side, that can cause difficulty and may need surgery to correct it. Allergies could affect both sides of your nose, not just one in most cases.
We have an email from Carol in Wisconsin Rapids. She says, I've been diagnosed with several late summer allergies relating to pollens, but since this past summer, I've been intermittently losing my sense of smell and taste. Have you ever encountered this? I can taste and smell things most of the day, but toward evening lose all ability to taste anything. Breathing remains normal, don't seem to be stuffed up at all. Had a CT scan, which was normal, and have seen an ENT specialist who was stumped. This happens, by the way, wherever I am, not just at home or one particular place.
Well, I'm not sure I can answer that. That's a puzzler, too, for all of us. Why you would have intermittent loss of sense of smell and taste is unless you are plugged up and can't get the air up in there to be able to smell it, smell things is kind of unusual. So I'm sorry I can't answer that question.
That's a tough one. Carol in Oshkosh, on to you now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question. I'm trying to help my brother-in-law in Michigan, and he developed a severe itching problem over a year ago. It was after he started on a cholesterol-lowering medication. And in the meantime, he was diagnosed with blastomycosis. They thought it was that was causing it. And then the doctor decided to do scrapings for scabies, which he's had 12 scrapings, and all of them were negative. But he's been treated 12 times for scabies, and he feels better after he's treated for the scabies, even though he's never been, the scrapings were all negative. So I was wondering if you can help this man with his severe itching problem that will not subside.
Well, again, that's a tough one and would require the expertise of a specialist in skin disease to really try to help figure that one out, too. It's hard to say over the phone just exactly what that might be.
It could be a disease, then, you're saying.
Well, it's hard to know exactly what that really represents.
Yeah, I can't help you there.
If the medication is affecting it, stopping the medication certainly would be one consideration, but a skin specialist might help.
Could your Andy wonders if you could talk about allergy reactions. Specifically, one hears a lot about sneezing and itching as a common allergy reaction. But how about fatigue? Can allergies cause lethargy and fatigue without other reactions?
Well, that's unusual. This has been talked about in the literature over the years. I think what happens to people who do have allergies or other issues that affect their upper respiratory system, it affects their sleep quality, and because of that, they get sleep disruption and often feel fatigued. But as far as I know, we don't have direct evidence that you can just have fatigue as a manifestation of allergy itself.
And let's go to Carol in Milwaukee next. Carol, hello to you. Carol, are you there?
I think you got lines mixed up.
Who've we got?
Okay, you got Frank in Port Edwards.
All right, Frank, go right ahead.
Okay, my wife is 84. All of her life, she's had chronic, I would say, rhinitis or sinusitis with a post-nasal drip kind of a thing.
Yeah.
In the last year or so, a cough that I associate with that has gotten a lot worse. We have seen our GP, and he did a head scan, CAT scan, and he said that you have asthma. That's what's causing your cough, and he sent us to an allergist. The allergist did a panel of tests to see what she might be allergic to and found nothing. He prescribed a couple of different inhaler devices with, those, I guess, steroids or something, but not any great amount of help at all has been given to us. And I'm just wondering, what kind of a specialist do you think we should go to next?
Well, I think determining the cause of the cough is critical. Asthma can present with cough. Postnasal drip can be a cause of cough. Reflux, they're from the stomach, they're just a sinus disease, there's just a whole variety of things. So you have to take each one of those individually and determine if that needs to be treated, if it is not responding to the current medications, and look for other explanations if it's not responding to the medication that have been prescribed.
So you need to, should we see?
Well, I think if you are seeing an allergist who is a board-certified allergist, that's certainly a starting point.
Okay.
If you're not responding, just mention that and make sure that they're following up correctly.
Okay. Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Matt from Madison wonders, is it possible for the dry air from, say, exercising outside to lead to the symptoms of a sore throat? And if so, why would these symptoms appear now as opposed to earlier in the season when the air began to drop in relative humidity?
Well, certainly if you're breathing in dry air, that can irritate your throat. And certainly with exercising in cold air and dry air, that increases the effect. So that may be the explanation. There may have been more humidity earlier in the year, too, that did not seem to affect the person quite as much.
Todd in Minocqua is up next. Todd, hello to you.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
I just wanted to call in and tell you that I'm an HVAC technician, and we do indoor air quality testing.
Yeah.
And we typically see a lot of things in the home, like volatile organic compounds and other things that add to people's respiratory problems that often give symptoms that are allergy-like symptoms or contribute to the allergy symptoms that they're already having. Because our bodies are systems. They don't just work off of one vitamin or one pill or one. And when we see a decrease in humidity, an increase in allergens, things like that, they work in combination together to give us symptoms. And it's often more than one thing that will lead to a fix. as we find in a home, like some more fresh air with some added humidity and reduced allergens and things like that.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Comment? Yeah,
that was a very good comment that you made there, particularly the volatile organic compounds or odors that act as irritants. So when you combine an allergy, particularly with an irritation, your allergy makes you more susceptible to these irritants, like strong odors, like dust particles and so forth. So our cold air, all those things are magnified if you have an underlying allergy. So as he mentioned, it is a concert of different things in the air. If you have allergy, that should be addressed. But in addition, these other factors can magnify the problem. And in some people, it's just the irritants, so the tests for allergy turn up negative. So you can have allergy with irritant effects. You can have irritants effects. You can have allergy effects, all those, or combinations thereof.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Todd, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Krista is emailing from northern Wisconsin, where we're burning more wood this year to help save money. Been pretty common to burn wood for heat to help save money, particularly in the north. Can you address any concerns with burning wood in a home with the soot, the dust, and things carried in on woods? Is there a way to combat some of these issues if wood burning is unavoidable right now?
Well, certainly, you know, by making sure the wood is dry and not bringing in damp wood that might have mold growth inside is one thing. And then once you're burning it, obviously there's more particulate matter in the air. You have to obviously have making sure you have good ventilation to make sure you don't get carbon monoxide problems. And so there are a lot of irritants that can be generated by burning wood in the home, and those may affect you. So making sure there's good fresh air exchange and so forth can be very helpful in that case.
Lisa from Muscadet has allergies to dust, trees, grass, pet dander, life on the farm, essentially. And after cleaning dusty animal pens or baling hay, I have become sick for days or more than a week. Can you explain how antibodies as related to allergies can make a person feel so sick for this long?
Well, that's pretty unusual, but we do know this, that allergy is more or less a chronic disease. It's not just you get a sneezing spell and it's over, that there's inflammation that's generated in the tissues, and this may go on for some time. And there are examples, say, in certain situations, particularly grain dust, where a person can have one exposure and then have repeated asthma attacks over 4 or 5 days following that, especially at night. So they have the exposure in the daytime, they get an asthma attack. That night they have one, the next night they have one, the next night.
Oh,
and it
man.
Goes on for days just from one exposure to something like that.
Oh, man. Shireen in Springbrook, we turn to you now. Hi, Shireen.
Good morning. I would like to tell everyone about the Dr. David Morris Clinic in La Crosse. He does allergy testing for even environmental things, like I'm allergic to petroleum products, which is in perfume. It's anything that's scented.
All right. Comment, Dr. Bush?
Well, yes, these are well-recognized cause of symptoms. It's unusual for an odor to actually cause an allergic reaction in the sense that it doesn't affect the immune system the same way that a pollen, dander, dust mites do. But these can cause symptoms. There's no question about that, that some people are very sensitive to odors, and sometimes it's very specific odor. It could be one perfume and not another, perhaps, sometimes. It's very it varies from person to person, but we really haven't figured out what really is the mechanism behind that, and it makes treatment that much more difficult if you really don't understand how this occurs, but there are certainly people that have that problem.
Are women more likely to have that problem than men?
To some extent, it may be the fact that women tend to, in general, seek medical advice more than men. Yeah. So we do see more women in our clinics typically with these kind of symptoms. But nonetheless, it can affect both men and women.
All right. We'll take some more questions and comments here. Thanks again, Shireen, for your call. The number for you to join us is 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Kathy in La Crosse, I think, is next. So let's go there. Kathy, hello.
Hi. I had two quick questions for the doctor. The first one is that a couple of years ago, I got bit by a spider, and I had a reaction on my arm, like up the vein where I actually got bit by it. The next time I got bit by a spider, I actually had a really severe reaction where when I would stand up, I would, like, lose all the feeling in my legs, kind of, and, like, almost the middle of my body would, like, almost seize up like I was having a contraction, like I was in labor or something.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, is that just going to get worse and worse every time I get bit by a spider now? Is there something I can do, you know, what should I do when that happens, number one? Is that, like, something I need to do something about right away? Or?
You know, I will preface this by saying Phil Pelletieri, our entomologist who we have on often, says that oftentimes bites that are attributed to spiders aren't necessarily spiders that are doing the biting. But let Dr. Bush, I'll let you go ahead and talk.
Well, this is not an area that I'm an expert in by any means, but, you know, there are venoms perhaps in these insects. And then the other thing is that we do know that other insect bites can occasionally lead to allergic reactions. But the symptoms that you're experiencing, I would say, would not be typical for an allergic reaction. I'm not aware there's any way to test for spider venom allergy, if there is such a thing. It's never been reported to my knowledge, but these may be the toxic effects of bites that are bothering you.
Okay, and one more quick question. I have always had kind of mild allergy problems. Like when I lay down at night, I'll get stuffed up, and I've taken Benadryl kind of off and on. Usually it's worse in the summer, but I just got my parotid glands removed last year because I had some swelling and infection in the glands. And since then, I've been having a lot of problems just swallowing. I know there's saliva issues, but the inside of my nose and the back of my throat are really swollen, and I've tried a couple of different medications for it. Do you think that will improve over time if I do this nasal steroid stuff and this inhaler? And if I'm on that stuff now, will I probably, like, kind of be stuck taking that forever now?
Well, that's a difficult question. I think that's something you need to discuss with the physician that prescribed these and see exactly. It takes about a month of regular use of a nasal steroid spray that you mentioned to really see the full effect. So you need to be on at least a month probably to see if it works or not. But if it doesn't seem to be affecting you or helping you at that point, then certainly following up with the physician is the best thing.
And it's the best thing to do. Okay, thank you very much for calling. If we've mentioned mold in passing, if there's a mold situation in your home during winter, what should you do in that circumstance?
Well, if there's mold growth in the home in winter, that indicates that there's probably a moisture source that's the difficulty. It could be condensation on the window panes, not getting enough heat to the window, for example. There could be a leak somewhere. Clearly, mold growth is a reflection of moisture issue that needs to be addressed. You need to clean it up, remove any material that's contaminated that you can remove. You can wash surfaces that are washable with some dilute bleach solution with a little detergent in it to clean it up. But first and foremost, getting rid of the moisture issue is the critical thing.
It's the critical thing. What about these HEPA-filtered vacuum cleaners? We hear about them. Are they effective in removing or reducing pet allergen exposure?
Well, for pet allergens, that might be something that would be helpful. If we compare dust mite allergens to pets, what we find is this. The dust mite allergen is a fairly large aerodynamic particle, meaning that it's doesn't stay in the air very long, so filters in the air don't help with that. But for pets, they do. And then if you're vacuuming, a HEPA filter would pick up the very small particles that pets leave behind. The dust mites, you don't necessarily need something that efficient. A good double bag, thick carpet bag works for those because the particle is large enough to be filtered, so you don't have to go to HEPA for house dust mite. For pets, maybe.
Mm. And just on the carpeting and rugs again, cleaning those carpeting, cleaning, you know, if you're moving into a place, cleaning those carpets important to get...
Well, it depends on, you know, what you're trying to remove there. Certainly just the soil and dirt and particulates. Cleaning is very essential. For pet dander, you can help, as I said, with a HEPA filter vacuum to get rid of pet dander that might be residual there. The thing about pet dander is that, especially cats, we know it's a charged particle, so it sticks to surfaces like the walls. And if you clean a house or just simply remove a pet, let's say, simply remove the pet, it takes 6 months for that material to kind of get back to where there's never been a cat. But there's always some cat allergen in the environment, no matter where you are, in places where there's never been a pet. And carpets are a big reservoir for dust mites as well, particularly if you have it on a cement slab, like in a basement, because there's always some moisture there that they thrive on. They've got the nice... carpeting pile to hook onto. They attach to that, and then we walk through and shed our skin, and they're happy as clams down in there.
Dr. Bush, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Dr. Robert Bush, allergy and asthma researcher, professor emeritus at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, as we talk with him about allergens and irritants indoors. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.